Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series, we have a 30 Issues Wiki. It's not just a comments page. It's a way for you to collaborate with each other to help produce six of our 30 Issues programs. Our wiki for tomorrow's show has really gotten good on the issues of broadcast and internet regulation. Check out the 30 Issues Wiki and contribute to it at wnyc.org/30issues. Well, my next guest's concern with the economic crisis is probably not for the Wall Street executives or shareholders, but for what this crisis will mean for America's children. Marion Wright Edelman got her start working on Dr. Martin Luther King's Poor People's Campaign and went on to found and run the Children's Defense Fund. She's written a new book called The Sea is So Wide and My Boat is So Small, Charting a Course for the Next Generation, and I'm very pleased to have her back on The Brian Lehrer Show. Welcome back to WNYC, Marion Wright Edelman.
Well, thank you for having me, Brian.
Are you following the credit crisis with an eye toward your advocacy work?
Oh, I'm following this credit crisis and the possible rate in our treasury of $800 billion at a time when 500,000 more children have fallen into poverty. 500,000 more children have fallen into poverty between 2005 and 6 before this economic downturn. But the real economic problem is really what's happening to our families at the bottom level and with our children.
So it sounds from your first remark there that you're against the bailout. But what we hear from the president and many others from both parties is that this really affects everybody, because if you can't get credit, you can't borrow for home ownership, for sending your children to school, all of these things that that would really affect everybody if the economy and the credit market totally freezes up. Are you skeptical?
Well, I'm against a reckless rush to a bailout without our knowing what it is we're bailing out, who it is we're bailing out, what are the accountability measures, is it going to be fair, are people at the bottom and in the middle class going to be protected, and what this is going to mean for investment in the other crisis of human capital deficits. And the fact that we have a child born into poverty in this country every 33 seconds and born without health insurance every 41 seconds, and our leaders last year said that we could not afford $70 billion to insure all of our 9 million uninsured children and pregnant women over 5 years, that we somehow all of a sudden can afford $800 billion without adequate debate and thought. I hope we'll slow down and think about what we're doing and what it is they're trying to get America to buy.
So do you see this bailout as competitive with the agenda that you feel so strongly about for universal health care in America?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, where's the money going to come from? I mean, we're always told we've got to figure out how we're going to pay for children's health, how we're going to pay for early education and Head Start, how we're going to pay to lift children out of poverty, and we don't have the money. Well, how do we all of a sudden find this money? We need to be thoughtful and to balance off these competing needs.
What about how you pay even for the Children's Defense Fund and whether that might be at risk? You know, in New York, one of the conversations is that many nonprofits get so much of their funding from individuals on Wall Street and companies on Wall Street that there's a crisis trickling right down to the nonprofit sector in New York as a result.
I'm sure this will have a devastating effect on many nonprofits. CDF has never taken a dime of government money, so that doesn't affect us. And we've always tried to diversify, not be reliant on any sector, so that we could feel free to say what had to be said for children who don't have a voice. And so it may well affect us, but we will be there because, you know, we do have a diverse funding base and have existed for 35 years and will continue to raise an independent voice for children.
Your book is a series of letters to parents, teachers, leaders, young people themselves, and all the way up to the late Dr. King and God. Parents come first. Is that the most important piece of the puzzle?
Well, that's the beginning piece of the puzzle. Parents are the most important people in children's lives, but parents can't alone raise their children. I lay out a parent's bill of responsibilities for children and remind us all as parents and grandparents how we are role models for our children. And we adults, too many of us, parents, religious leaders, teachers, and educators that I also write letters to, have dropped the ball of responsibility. And while we complain about our children, you know, people say, what's wrong with our children? I say, we adults are what's wrong with with our children. We really need to be mindful of our role, but we also, I do a letter to leaders about the misguided priorities of our nation and our taking from the poor at the bottom and the middle class and giving massive tax cuts to the rich and squandering our children's future and a $10 billion a month thing to Iraq. We need to reorder our moral compass and our national priorities and invest in our children.
You're fairly direct in your instructions to parents, quote, "Don't let TV or the internet raise your child. Read to your child. Do not abuse tobacco, alcohol, cocaine, or other drugs." Did you happen to hear at the Democratic Convention how when Barack Obama went to the part of his speech that was similar to that, it got one of the biggest cheers of anything in the entire speech? Funny enough, that, and I was in the stadium, and to my ear, that, and admonishing fathers in particular to be present for their children, and invoking equal pay for equal work. You know, here we are in the middle of the Iraq war, fiscal crisis, everything else. Those are the things that sent the crowd wild.
Well, I was there and I agree, and I'm glad that he's speaking out on this. And one of the things I say in here is that I don't want our boys or young men being raised in this country thinking that fatherhood ends with conception, or I don't want our girls being raised by BET thinking they're boobs and booties. We've got to really begin to reestablish the sense of who we are intrinsically, and parents do need to cut off those TVs and teach our children to read. But the whole community has to come together and reweave the fabric of family and community. When I was growing up, we were community property, and we had very clear values, very clear sense of what was expected of us, and clear support for our parents and for ourselves. We need to get that again.
When Hillary Clinton, who I know worked very closely with you years ago, wrote the book It Takes a Village, she used you as an example of someone raised by the community.
Well, that's right. And we need to reweave that fabric of community. The religious community needs to speak out and to open up their doors to give children positive alternatives to the streets and to compete with the gangs and the drug dealers who are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And our schools need to have high expectations. And I say here to teachers that you're the second most important people in many ways. But if you don't love children, don't respect them, and don't expect all children to learn, for goodness sakes, get out of the classroom, because children need reinforcement that are positive.
Were you the one who originally came up with the phrase, "leave no child behind"?
Well, it came, yes. That's the Children's Defense Fund's legally trademarked logo. But, you know, the Bush administration hijacked that, even though it was illegal. They, you know, one of the things, the hubris of people who take the slogans and kill off the substance and the husk. And I just hope that the American people will understand that we really mean it and that we really do need to leave no child behind, because every year we leave 13 million children behind in poverty, loses the American public $500 billion in foregone productivity. And every year we let all of our children drop out of school every 10 seconds of the school day, and we got 65% of our white kids, all of our kids, and 80% of our black and Latino children. We're cutting off our nose. The real long-term problem and crisis that we need to address is investing for the future, and that's our children today.
We've got about a minute left. I know you're a big critic of high-stakes standardized testing, but did you support the aim of No Child Left Behind, and do you think it has made some important progress, particularly with its focus on closing the racial achievement gap?
I liked some of the accountability features, and I think that schools should be accountable, but we also should not over-rely on tests, and we need to make sure that what we're testing is what's going to enable us to help the individual child do better. And so I hope as we go forward to renew it that we will put the adequate resources in it, but that we will adjust the things that have been not working.
So outside of the funding piece itself, what would you adjust? What would you have the next president and Congress adjust in No Child Left Behind in about 20 seconds?
Well, I think we need to address teacher quality, class size, length of the school day and school week. And I think that just judge whether we're not over-relying on tests and look at the kinds of tests and whether they're appropriate to helping individual children do better in school.
Still going strong, Marion Wright Edelman. How long have you been doing this?
35 years. I thought I would be out of business. We're celebrating our 35th this year, but we've got to build a movement, and women and all of us have got to raise a ruckus about our country going backwards and not taking care of our children.
Marion Wright Edelman, founder of the Children's Defense Fund, her new book, The Sea is So Wide and My Boat is So Small, Charting a Course for the Next Generation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.